You and I chatting it up on a Thursday, February 22nd, 2024 edition of Connecticut Today, right here on WICC. I wondered up front why the apparent callous disregard for the safety of Secret Service personnel at the Biden White House is getting so little media coverage. University of New Haven Associate Professor of National Security, International Affairs, and Political Science, Dr. Matthew Schmidt, stopped by. He returned to the show to give us his thoughts on the current situations in the various world hotspots, while Only in Bridgeport blogger Lenny Grimaldi stopped by for his weekly update.
I like dogs. I have nothing against dogs. I'm generally a cat person, but I've had a dog, you know, back when I was married. There's certain breeds of dogs I don't like. I've been lunged at by pit bulls two or three times, and you know, if you look at the dog bite stats, you'll find that pit bulls are up there. So if I was to own a dog right now on, you know, February 22nd, 2024, I would take, you know, I had a beagle when I was married with my son and his mom. The beagles are wonderful. Beagles are wonderful. All they want to do is eat. You got to watch out because they can overeat. They get fat and they die because of the weight problems, or when they lock onto a scent, they're a hunting dog, so they will, okay, there she goes. She'll be back in a day or two after not finding the scent. So I do like certain breeds of dog. But let me ask you this, as we're up and underway here on this Thursday, glad to have you with us. If you or I had a dog, let's just say, let's call it generic dog. Let's call it Fido. Shall we? And let's say Fido bit somebody, right? And bit somebody for the first time. And you'd be there going, oh, Fido, bad boy, bad girl. Don't ever do that again. And maybe somebody nipped it, you know, Fido nipped at somebody. And maybe they were nice enough to say, all right, listen, it was a flesh wound. It's fine. I see you have the dog all the time. So I'm not going to really go nuts here. So, you know, try and calm the dog down. Okay, so a little bit of time goes by on the timeline, and Fido bites somebody again. Oh, boy. Two times here, Fido has now bitten somebody, and this someone is not as accommodating as person number one was, either in your family or your next door neighbor or the fine man or woman that delivers the mail carrier. And the second person that gets bitten by Fido, even though Fido may not have meant it, the second person goes, hey, I'm calling the cops. And the cops come and they take their usual report of a dog bite. And the police will probably say, well, all right, sir or ma'am, you know, we see the dog got out of the yard. So I don't know what police do. If there's any law enforcement people out there, active or retired, you can tell me that, email me, or call me at 333-9422. Okay, so that's two strikes. All right, so let's say you say, okay, I'm going to take Fido to obedience classes. Let's say the dog, you put him or her through the paces. Okay, geez, stop biting people. All right, you can't. You're going to stop doing this? I'll give you a treat. You're going to stop doing this? Okay, whatever. And let's say within a stretch of time, it's a third strike. Fido bites somebody and breaks the skin, and it's serious. Now, you may have somebody file charges against you. The cops would probably come and say, well, Mr. and Mrs. So-and-so, we've seen our records. We were called out to your address last fall for a dog bite. It appears to be the same dog. You say you've taken remedial steps here, but we have to maybe go something further here. What are you going to do? This person wants to press charges. You know where I'm going here, okay? Now, for me, and I would think for you folks too, especially if you are dog owners who may own right now or may have owned a breed in the past with a propensity, doesn't make dogs bad, but certain things trigger them, past experience, past upbringing, if they were a rescue or adopted, or some of the breeds, the more pure the breed you get, the more aggressive they can be, whatever. So I don't think dogs are inherently bad creatures, but they react to different things. Okay. Now, I don't know about you. I would give my dog, I mean, after the second bite. Okay, any dog can bite a first time, right? With me, after the second bite, I'd be like, oh, boy, this is not good. This was unprovoked. Now, after the third bite, the dog would be gone. Okay? This is me. Maybe after the second bite. But after the third bite, bye-bye. I don't care what they do with it. Seriously. If I have a creature that's going to be attacking people no matter what I do, and if I have a regard for my fellow human beings, as much as we love animals, on God's pecking order, people are more important than animals. Now, the way people react sometimes is a little weird. You know, somebody leaves a box of puppies on the side of a road. It's the lead story on the 6 o'clock news. You know, our lead story tonight, a town is in fear after three live puppies were found. Meantime, you know, somebody gets carjacked and killed, nobody cares. What am I driving at with this? I'll tell you what I'm driving at. And this story has kind of been out there, but again, as I float this story, I want you to think about what's going on inside the mind, or the lack thereof, of the guy who's in the White House right now. And ask yourself what the reaction would have been if this was A, Donald Trump, or B, any Republican. This basic story is out. You can find it. You got to dig for it a little bit, but the major networks have found it, but you're not going to see it up front. Joe Biden's dog, Commander, bit Secret Service agents at least 24 times, according to a new report. 24 times. The dog should have been booted after the second time, if it were me. I'm not kidding you. So you get this story. This is mind-numbing for me, and it should be for you on a bunch of different levels here. This is from the edition. This is from the report in Forbes magazine. President Joe Biden's German Shepherd Commander has bitten Secret Service personnel on at least 24 occasions. 24, not two, not four. 24 occasions. According to documents obtained by CNN, adding to a troubling series of incidents involving Mr. Biden's dog. Commander, Biden's two-year-old German Shepherd, has been involved in incidents with uniformed Secret Service personnel. We're not talking about people scaling the White House walls and looking to attack somebody. Biden's two-year-old German Shepherd has been involved in incidents with uniformed Secret Service personnel and members of the Biden Protective Detail, according to records obtained through the Freedom of Information Act from CNN. Those attacks. Now, you understand something, folks. This is mind-numbing. It gets even weirder. You have the leader of the free world and his family keeping a what seems to be a vicious and out-of-control animal close enough to the people entrusted and empowered with protecting the Biden family, to the point where the dog bit somebody 24 times. 24. Imagine if this was a Republican president. Imagine if this was the Trump family doing this. Those attacks forced Secret Service personnel to change their workplace habits to avoid further injuries, according to the report, which included an email from an anonymous agent who said, quote, "The recent dog bites have challenged us to adjust our operational tactics when Commander is present," unquote. So you have, try and wrap your arms around this. You have the Secret Service, the protectorate of the president and his family, no matter where they are, having to readjust their tactics because the commander-in-chief and more and likely his wife and kids hold on to a vicious and out-of-control animal. Now, there are rumors, apparently, that they finally got rid of the dog in the fall. There have been rumors to and from that. But can I ask you something here? Is this not a indication or, I'm searching for the word here, an indication or a prime, I don't know whether you're saying example or red flag, as to the mental competence of the guy sitting in the Oval Office right now? What kind of person? Let me ask you this. Here's an open question. If you want to chime in here at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC, if you or I had a dog that bit one, two, or three people, chances are the dog would be taken from us, we would be facing a lawsuit and or criminal prosecution, right? As we should. But here you have Joe Biden in obviously some sort, I would only think, and I know I'm not a professional here, but I would only think you've got to be in some sort of altered state of mental health. Or you have had some manner of a fracture in your thinking as a human being and as a compassionate person, not only the president of the United States, that you keep a dog around people, some of whom whose stated mission is to offer up their life or lives to protect you, and you keep around a dog that bites them. Back to this Forbes article, CNN reporting the incidents occurred at the White House as well as Biden's home in Rehoboth Beach in Wilmington, Delaware, as well as Nantucket, where the Bidens spent their last two Thanksgiving holidays, and Camp David. So, Joe Biden, I guess the first lady and the Biden kids, allowed a dog to bite people 24 times. The 24 times do not include previous incidents involving Commander that CNN had already reported, while the report published last July by the conservative group Judicial Watch listed at least 10 more instances, including one that forced a uniformed officer to seek treatment at a nearby hospital. Ladies and gentlemen, I submit to the jury that the Biden family is nuts. All right, let's shift gears here. Bring back one of our go-to folks, University of New Haven Associate Professor of National Security, International Affairs, and Political Science to try and give us a little deeper understanding as to what's going on in the world hotspots. Dr. Matthew Schmidt, back to chat with us for a few minutes. Matt, it's Paul here at WICC. Good afternoon. How are you?
I am doing all right on this sunny Thursday.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's go to the elephant right in the room here. You know, Matt, a couple of days ago when I saw that, Alexei Navalny tragically was dead, everybody kind with a brain knew what was going on. But let's go deeper into this now, Matt. Where do we stand in the whole Russia-Ukraine thing? Of course, there are a lot of pig-headed folks in Congress that won't approve any more funding. But even with that funding or without, what's the latest landscape look like?
The latest landscape is difficult for Ukraine. They have suffered a tactical loss in Avdiivka in the east against the Russians. More importantly than the territory, which isn't that important, they apparently have lost 800 to 1,000 men that were captured or are missing in action. Right now, that is a huge number of people. In any case, it's a huge number of experienced combat veterans, and it's a huge number for a military that is considerably smaller than its enemies. Go ahead.
No, right. I was going to say, man, I read a piece the other day that I thought was interesting, and it piqued my interest into why I wanted to have you on the air here. It was a piece written in the Wall Street Journal. It was an op-ed piece by a guy named Bill McGurn, who's been with the Journal for years, and he pointed out some of the language being used by the administration, and you tell me if this is significant or not, because you've been involved with these folks sometimes. He noted that the rhetoric toward Russia and Putin, not unexpectedly, is very harsh, is very pointed, but there's not an actual, Matt, a lot of cheering going on for Ukraine here. Is that a purpose and tactful approach as to how to handle this?
Yeah, so it's simply the administration saying we don't want to play into this idea that this is our war and Ukraine is our proxy. So any kind of cheering and applause for the war itself, right, may come across that way and may feed, Putin's narrative.
So let's assume that he offed Navalny, and they can talk all they want about this, sudden death syndrome. I mean, that's just a sad joke if ever there was one. What does Putin get out of this? I mean, is this just him swatting away another opposition person, or is he trying to push here and saying, hey, I'm not going away. Let's get to the table now. I mean, I know this isn't unexpected, but what is his goal here?
So let's dispose of the idea that Vladimir Putin is some kind of Svengali, right? Some kind of like genius strategist out there. He's not, and he never has been. But dictators always look that way relative to democracies because the decision-making process is messy in a democracy. So it looks like the dictator has better control over his understanding of the situation. This is not the case. Vladimir Putin killed Alexei Navalny because it was personal. Alexei Navalny, represented a certain kind of long-term threat to Putin's regimes, but Navalny is not as popular inside Russia as he is outside Russia, even before the crackdown on the press. And so I don't want to play down his power, and Alexei Navalny will go down in time in deeper history as this figure that created the conditions for the overthrow of Putin and his regime and the similar regimes that may come after it, right? He will go down, Navalny will go down as that kind of founding father, but he will go down as the person who set the conditions for that, right? Somebody had to be him, and he was, if you will, right? But he's not going to see the promised land. He made the conditions possible for people to get there, but he was never going to lead people into it because it's personal. It's personal for Putin. If you look at what Navalny did, if you look at the kind of guy he was, the personality he had, he was sweet and hilarious and absolutely cutting. And he not only exposed the corruption of Putin's billion-dollar palace and other things and was the first ones out there to say Putin is actually the richest man on earth, right, not Jeff Bezos or whoever it is now. But he didn't just say that. He made fun of him relentlessly, hilariously. And Putin hated him for it.
Interesting.
And he died. He killed him now because he had a chance to. He tried to kill him before. That plan was messed up. Why? Because Putin's not this great strategist. And he had to take time in order to kill Navalny when, the attention had faded.
Interesting.
And that was now.
Dr. Matthew Smith, the guest from the University of New Haven. Matt, let's go to the Middle East. The offensive, the Israel-Hamas war continues. The Houthi involvement here. Let's look at both of those if we can. Number one, Benjamin Netanyahu and his war cabinet say they're going to continue into Rafah. He claimed last week or a couple of weeks ago that he's got 75% of the Hamas battalions eliminated. So why stop now? And you still have, Matt, the involvement of the Houthis here, Iran here. So what's your overall picture of where we stand in that situation?
Israel suffered a terrible attack on October 7th, and they have every right to protect themselves. But the way in which the Netanyahu government is doing this is only going to leave Israel weaker in the long term. And they're massaging the numbers. When they tell you that they've got 75% of, you know, Hamas brigades mm-hmm. have been killed or captured. The truth is like, what does that mean? Nobody knows what a Hamas brigade is. So they're fluffing up the numbers in that way. And the second thing is whoever they are capturing and killing, and there are a lot, are low-level shooters who can be replaced easily with people already in that population or who would come from other parts of the world to fight Israel because of what Israel's doing in Gaza now. So when this particular round of intense shooting ends, the question is not like Israel safe. It's how many years did Israel buy itself before the next intifada happens?
Mm.
It's not that it's not going to happen. It'll happen, and it'll probably be worse because everybody understands now, you know, how hard Israel is going to hit back, or at least I should say not Israel, but this administration. And then the last thing is right for listeners is. Netanyahu is not popular in Israel. He barely has a government. He wouldn't be reelected again. And there is an enormous amount of protest, internal critique inside the military, right, and political critique about his leadership. So this isn't something that we say out here and isn't being said inside Israel. It is.
But yet he has, Matt, enough support barely to maintain that coalition. If he walked away tomorrow, who would take over? What would happen? Would it be Yair Lapid? And if he was in charge, how do you think another government, be it a coalition government or a minority government, majority government rather, how do you think they would go about executing this plan?
I can't answer that. Things are in such incredible flux. But let me play this scenario.
Sure.
If you have the flip side of how would the opposite of this government, this Netanyahu government, have reacted here? And the opposite approach would have been to, you know, seal off Gaza. It would have been to engage in intelligence driven. Small unit raids, a lot of special forces, things like that, and the goal would have been to remove Hamas from political power, and then bring in, you know, or create some kind of other political power organization that mm-hmm. could operate effectively in Gaza, right? And then, of course, the big question is: does that mean it's a two-state solution or a one-state solution? But it would have been political, more political, and less military.
Matt, in about the minute we have left here, the Houthis, yep. Is the U.S. and the coalition we have in the area, has the response been about right against the attacks from the Houthis?
Yeah, I think it has. You know, the administration has had to punch back hard and say, we will kill you if you kill us to deter you. And they've done that. And we've shown that we've been able to counter their technology to protect international shipping lanes. And that's been a big deal. Like inside the DOD, inside the Navy, everybody is going, we got it right. And then they're going, okay, when they iterate to do something different, what are we going to have to do? Because everybody's looking at this now and saying, this is the future. We're going to have an active Navy now that's going to really have to patrol and protect these shipping lanes, not just in the Middle East.
Excellent stuff. Dr. Matthew Schmidt, Associate Professor of National Security, International Affairs, and Political Science at the University of New Haven. Matt, as always, thank you for the interpretation. We appreciate it. Take care, and we'll talk down the road. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Paul.
Appreciate it. Dr. Matthew Schmidt there at the University of New Haven.
Well, will next Tuesday finally be it?
Now, we had Ali Frazier, 1, 2, and 3. We had, 7 or 8 or 9 Rocky movies as we go into the Creed franchise now. There have been, 9 Star Wars movies, 7 or 8 Star Trek movies. But on Tuesday, we get general election number 2, round 4. John Gomes versus Joe Ganim. And talking to us about that from onlyinbridgeport.com. Lenny Grimaldi's here. Lenny, how are you?
I don't think I can live with myself if this is the last vote.
What are you going to do? My God, jeez.
Yeah, you know what? Maybe Biden should sick his dog on Donald Trump. I was listening to that earlier. But you know what? My former boss doesn't need a dog to attack someone because he's the attack dog.
He does it. He does it all himself.
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah, we got a show to do here. Yeah, we got it. So we have a vote on Tuesday.
Yeah,
it's the fourth vote. And it's getting pretty messy out there. You know, charges and countercharges, but.
Yeah. Lenny, you're breaking up a little bit. I'm going to have you just move around a little bit if you can. And while you're relocating, sure. Lenny, I see this on your blog. State election complaint charges Gomes and conflicted GenNow votes with illegal campaign coordination. You put that up today. What's going on with that?
Oh, shocking. There'd be allegations in the many days of this race, right? you're probably going to get a few more. A couple of things happened. So the State Elections Enforcement Commission yesterday fined a Gomes supporter $1,000 for falsifying an address to run for city council.
Wow.
This is the first person that's been fined in this messy election cycle, and I dare say there's going to be a few more. And then today, a supporter of the mayor's, a city council member, filed a complaint with the State Elections Enforcement Commission, charging that the community group, Bridgeport Generation Now Votes, mm-hmm. Has engaged in this illegal campaign coordination with John Gomes. What does this mean? So the way this is set up, an entity like Bridgeport Generation Now Votes can make as large as an independent expenditure to anyone they want,
yeah,
for or against the candidate, but they can't play footsies with the benefiting candidate. They can't coordinate. They can't get together and strategize. And so I broke a story a couple of days ago of John Gomes in his car, where he had two eyewitnesses say one of the leaders of Bridgeport Generation Now Votes got into his car downtown. They're not really there to talk about, you know, sugar plum fairy tales, right? they're there to talk about campaign strategy. So based on that, a complaint was filed. And so it'll go to the state, and the commission will probably take it up and investigate it. And you know, there's going to be a number of people, I think, that's going to be fine in this process.
Now, are you saying that? And I know you want to wait till the fines are actually levied out of the charges, but a number of people were talking. How many is a number? Give me an over under.
Dozens and dozens, I think.
Wait a minute,
so
dozens.
I think so, yeah. There's been so many. There's been so many. There have been so many complaints involving probably, 100 people, okay? So I'm not all of them are going to be taken up, but I wouldn't be surprised if it wasn't dozens. It's going to be many. I think it's going to be double digits. Again, the State Elections Enforcement Commission only has civil authority,
yeah,
over campaigns. They are the campaign watchdogs. They have the authority to fine, but they have no criminal oversight. What they can do, if they feel like the funny business has really crossed the line to some level of criminality, then they can refer to the state's attorney's office.
What are you hearing, Lenny Grimaldi? Anything about absentees, the AB applications and the ballots, anything we should know, anything you've been able to sniff out that may indicate a trend here or there?
Yeah, absolutely. So I just checked the absentee ballot log today, and the so every Tuesday and Thursday, the town clerk's office issues a recording of, mm-hmm, how many absentee ballots have returned. So far, according to the latest count, about 1,800 mail-in ballots have come into the town clerk's office.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have, by Tuesday's vote, you'll probably have, pretty close to 2,500, 23, 24 in that range, that will vote by absentee. And it's kind of running along the same kind of trend as the previous three votes. So irrespective of all of the hullabaloo that was made over the absentees into the ballot boxes, the drop boxes, last September, the political operatives of both sides are still working it. And, once again, Ganim is going to have a sizable absentee ballot lead on Tuesday. He's going to start the day ahead. So that's going to place a premium on John Gomes to turn out a vote. Again, there's 70,000 registered electors are eligible to vote. Maybe, maybe 13, 14, 15,000 will come out, somewhere between 20 and 25%. That would be my guess. Then the good news is, how often we were talking about the weather potentially being a factor.
Yeah.
Tuesday, weather looks like it's going to be balmy, like 53.
Yeah, I saw that, yeah.
So, you know, and the second primary last month overperformed the first primary. So, so much for the weather, right? Were we talking about?
Yeah, but, you know, and I understand how they had to take it into account. So we'll see what happens. Other stuff going on before we get to your old boss, because we always end on that. The vacant AT&T building. I like this stuff when, you know, cities are looking for housing to get people to live there. So what's going on with the vacant AT&T building?
So this thing has been vacant, you know, for a long time. And there's a New York City developer who secured a $2 million grant from the state for environmental cleanup. So last June or so, the governor announced he was going to free up, you know, $25 or $30 million grants that could be dedicated to developers who cleaned up vacant properties or environmental cleanup properties. And so this developer, Kramars Aguela, has had a press conference yesterday with the mayor and the development officials saying he's moving forward with 77 artist lofts, 67 are market rate and 10 affordable in the initial phase, and as well as another 60 affordable rate units built on an adjacent parking lot property on Fairfield Avenue in downtown. So the AT&T building, you can see it quite clearly. Anyone who's driving on Route 8, 25A connector, you can see that the AT&T, they took the sign off, right? But you can still see that blur of the AT&T.
Yeah.
Embedded into the building. So that is a very visible building from the connector, easy on, easy off. And the developer promises that he is going to start the renovation the second quarter of this year. So, you know, possibly April, May.
Yeah, great stuff. And that's right near our old studios. In fact, now, Lenny, this always fascinates me when 67 market rate units, and of course, there's state laws, there has to be obviously affordable there. But any guesses, Lenny, what a market rate unit is? And is that really going to, is that number going to really be affordable for the average Bridgeport person? Are they trying to maybe get people away from Fairfield and Stamford or whatever? Did the developer have any idea of what he's targeting for a rent?
Yeah, he hasn't specified yet what it's going to be, but you know, I think probably the affordable number might be $1,400 or $1,500.
Yeah,
maybe a little less, and the market rate, just judging by other market rate properties, rentals in Bridgeport, they're like, there could be $1,800, there could be $2,000. It depends. One bedroom or two, right? So
yeah.
If it's two bedrooms, it could go more. So, but yeah, you have a lot of things teed up in downtown Bridgeport on the housing front. You know, they're calling that workforce housing, right? That's kind of the new word for it. They're in that affordable number. This is kind of workforce is synonymous with affordable housing.
Finally, Mr. Grimaldi, your old boss, Mr. Trump, number 45 there. He got hit hard by the judge in New York and Letitia James, the AG. Of course, he's going to appeal. She says, look, if he doesn't come up with the money on time, she'll seize his property. A lot of people say, well, he may have grounds for an appeal, if not the actual case, the verdict, but maybe the amount here. You know, he's been claiming, Lenny and his supporters saying, hey, everybody got paid. The banks like doing business with me. But Lenny, it certainly looks like, and you tell me if you think I'm wrong, it seems to me, because the polls aren't moving a lot, they're trying to choke off his money, aren't they? Isn't that what this is about?
Yeah, I mean, if they can glom his account, you know, the government going after glomming your accounts, you know, it's going to be a possibility, you know, at some point, you know, to freeze assets, but puts him in a real pickle, because you know he can't go out, he's not going to have the financial wherewithal to go out, you know, and borrow money. Now there might be, you know, there might be a guy out there who, you know, we'll give him $100 million or something like that. So he's got some, you know, rich fat cats that he knows that might help him on that level. But yeah, it's getting tight, right? A little bit on the news side, but for him, you know, you're right. The polling isn't moving that much. You're going to have the South Carolina primary this weekend, right? And right now, he looks like he's up 2-1, and you know, she's campaigning there, and he's not. What does that tell you, right?
Yeah.
So,
now,
Nikki Haley has to hang in. She has nothing really to lose because at some point she's betting that something's going to happen.
Yeah.
Right? Something's going to happen to maybe turn this thing around. And so maybe she's the last person standing. Who knows?
Speaking of standing, are you standing in some of those gold Trump high tops that he rolled out the other day at Sneaker Con? Those are subtle, aren't they? You going to be rocking a set of those, Lenny, or not?
No. I had my share of Trump sneakers way back in the day, so I'm not going to be there anymore.
Yeah, but you know, you talk about his money, Lenny. Finally, in about the minute we have left, I'm reading where all of a sudden now, and people thought the thing was going to collapse. You've got, I mean, I guess this company or this merger that was okay by the SEC last week that revolves around his social media platform, Trump Social. I mean, I'm reading where this could pump $300 million into him. So, you know, he continues to work on his nine lives.
Well, my tagline would be, you can't shine a sneaker, right? So, can't shine a sneaker, baby. Here you go.
Yeah, there you go. Lenny Grimaldi, only in Bridgeport.com. Go there. The big story Lenny has up today that was just kind of just broke. State election complaint charges John Gomes and conflicted Jen now votes with illegal campaign coordination. So go there, check it out. I'll put it up on our Facebook page as well. Lenny, thank you. Be good, and we'll talk next week. Have a good weekend.
All right, see you next week. Thank you.
All right, there you go. Lenny Grimaldi, only in Bridgeport.com. State election complaint charges John Gomes and conflicted Jen now votes with illegal campaign coordination.